This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Cool Zone Media.
Hello, welcome to Better Offline. I'm Ed Zetron. Since 2020, Elon Musk has seeded his charitable foundation, innovatively called the Musk Foundation, with billions of dollars of Tesla stock, which has netted him a multi-billion dollar tax break. Yet a massive New York Times investigation by reporters Ryan Mack and David Farenthold has found that the Musk Foundation has failed to donate the minimum amount of money required by law to get that tax break. The investigation found that Musk had not hired any staff for the foundation, and that its board was made up of Musk and two volunteers, one of whom the Times reports works an average of 6 minutes a week on a charitable operation with billions of dollars of dry powder. And Musk's donations regularly benefited causes related to his own interests, like a school inside a SpaceX compound and a UN program to help countries find internet for rural schools, where two of them became Starlink customers. And Starlink is, of course, Musk's wireless internet company. And while Elon Musk initially promised to help, and I quote, fund fixing the water in any house in Flint, Michigan that has water contamination above FDA levels, he would only end up donating about $1 million to local schools, installing water filters and buying laptops for students. While this is unquestionably a good thing, he failed to do much more than that. All he did was send a Tesla goon down there to offer, and I'm not kidding, rides around the parking lot in his car. Since the middle of 2019, the Times reports that Musk has done little more for Flint than that. According to the Times, in 2021, the Musk Foundation fell $41 million short of the minimum required donation, and in 2022, missed it by an astonishing $234 million. That year, Musk's foundation only gave away the 2.25% of the 5% it was required to from its $7 billion in assets. Today, I'm joined by New York Times investigative reporter David Farenthold, who won a Pulitzer Prize for his work at the Washington Post investigating our big wet president, Donald J. Trump, and his dodgy charitable deals. David, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So, on a very basic level, what makes this Elon Musk charity story so remarkable? What's so different about it?
Well, there's two things that really stand out about the Musk Foundation. One is how big it is. So the Musk Foundation has more than $5 billion in assets, mostly Tesla stock. That makes it one of the 20 largest foundations in the United States. But the second thing is how small it is in its actions. It's big in its resources and small in its actions. So the Musk Foundation has repeatedly failed to give away just the bare minimum it's required to by law. And it also, when it does give its money away, the money doesn't go very far. By that, I mean, often Mr. Musk uses the money in his foundation to help himself or to help his businesses.
So can you give me an example of some of the ways he's using it to help himself?
Well, one of the biggest ones was in 2021, there's a guy named Jared Isaacman, who's a billionaire in Pennsylvania. He charters a rocket from SpaceX to go up into space. And as a way of sort of celebrating or ennobling what he's doing, he says, you know, I'm going to raise $200 million with this space flight for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital.
Right.
He goes up into space, he comes back down, and he hasn't raised $200 million. They're still short. And so Elon Musk then jumps in to save his customer from failing on this charitable pledge and says, I'll give $50 million. He eventually gives $55 million, not from his own pocket, but from the Musk Foundation. A few weeks later, the same billionaire says, you know what, I'm going to order three more flights from SpaceX. So he goes from being a good SpaceX customer to a really good SpaceX customer. And part of that process was the Musk Foundation. Another example was the Musk Foundation had never given any money to Cameron County, Texas. That's an area in the very, very southern tip of Texas where Musk has the SpaceX launch site. It had never given any money down there until March 2021, SpaceX rocket explodes there and rains metal down all over this area. An area, by the way, where he needs lots of regulatory approvals, goodwill, all kinds of help from the people who are the politicians down there. About an hour after the rocket explodes, the Musk Foundation starts giving to schools, to downtown beautification. The third example I'll bring up are these two schools that that Mr. Musk has started and supported with the Musk Foundation. On paper, these are supposed to be, like every charity, to serve the public, right? That's the point of a charity. It's not your it's not to serve you. It's not a, even if it's got your name on it, it doesn't serve your interest. It serves the public. So there's a school called Ad Astra that Mr. Musk started. There's another school called The Foundation. That's its legal name, The Foundation, that Mr. Musk has given a bunch of money to from the Musk Foundation. So we went to look, okay, where are these schools? Who are they serving? How are they serving the public? And the answer is that one of them is behind the locked gates of a SpaceX compound in Boca Chica, Texas. You can only get in if you are a SpaceX employee. And the other one, The Foundation, it's bought a school, a property to turn into a Montessori school that happens to be 2 minutes away from a huge subdivision Mr. Musk is building for his own employees outside Bastrop, Texas. So,
and which employees? For SpaceX?
For he's got a whole complex there that includes SpaceX, but it's mainly Boring Company employees.
Right.
Both these places are rural areas. He's trying to bring these highly talented, sought-after people to a pretty rural area of Texas. You can imagine one of the questions people would ask is, well, where are my kids going to go to school?
Right.
And so these two charities are helping Musk recruit by building schools to serve his employees.
So taking a step back, on a very basic level, how does it actually work? So has he's put this stock in escrow, I assume?
What happened was in 2021, he's facing this giant tax bill. He exercised a bunch of Tesla stock options, and he says he owed $11 billion in taxes. He takes $5 billion of Tesla stock. Now, that's not what he paid for the stock. It's what it's appreciated to. He donates it to charity. And now the tax law allows you to take a deduction based on the appreciated value of the stock. So the deduction to him could have been worth as much as $2 billion off of his tax bill.
Right.
He gives that stock to the Musk Foundation. Now, it's confusing because he's in charge of the Musk Foundation. It's got his name on it. But again, the Musk Foundation is by law a separate entity with its own strictly charitable goals. Even though it sounds like something that he's, you know, that's like another sort of pocket of his wallet, it's not. Right. It's a separate thing. So once the money once the shares go to the Musk Foundation, now he's given himself a responsibility. He's given himself a job. And that is, the IRS requires foundations to give away 5% of their assets every year. You can imagine why. It's to keep people from just dumping money into their foundation, getting the tax break, and never actually helping the world. You have to send 5% of your money out the door to the real world every year. And he hasn't. He didn't in 2021. He didn't in 2022. In fact, by the end of 2022, he was $234 million behind the minimum for what this foundation was supposed to have given away.
Right. But as far as the stock goes, does it sit separate to Musk? Is it in a separate holding account?
Yeah, it is legally the property of this foundation now, which means he's still in control of it, but it belongs to the foundation.
Does it have any liquid funds in there?
There's some. I think they've sold a few. There's a small amount of liquid cash. I think mostly what he does is it sells stock in order to make donations when it does.
So how does the tax break actually work? How much does he get off of his tax bill as a result of this?
So this is complicated, but what we were told was that in that year, they expected that this, that the the $5 billion. So he gives $5 billion worth of Tesla stock to his charity. The folks we talked to said that they thought the actual break from that, the actual reduction in his taxes, would be 37% of $5 billion, which is about $2 billion. So there's a lot of other math involved involving his income and other things, but that was the guess, was $2 billion off his taxes.
And who gave you this estimate? Just so we're clear,
We talked to a couple of professors of tax law.
Right. So what he gets out of this is just a tax break, but he's not donating enough money.
He's not actually
giving away what he's meant to.
Yeah, it's confusing to think about him and his foundation as separate entities. But in this case, he gives his foundation the $5 billion. And if he'd taken this $5 billion worth of Tesla stock and given it to St. Jude's or UNICEF or some other charity that he didn't control, that would have been the end of the story for him. He's given all the money. He's given these shares away. He takes the tax break, UNICEF or whoever, then uses the shares for whatever.
Right.
But so now he's like taking off his hat as donor and putting on the hat as the guy who runs the Musk Foundation. And now he has this responsibility as the head of the Musk Foundation to start giving this newfound money away. And that's when the 5% minimum matters to him. He has to give 5% of the foundation's assets away to other charities out to actually do good in the world every year.
And he isn't doing this enough.
No, he missed it in 2021 by $41 million. And then in 2022, he missed it by $234 million.
And so what's meant to happen to a regular person? One quick question. Does he get this tax break every year for holding it? Or is it just a one-off? He got a one-off?
Just the, you know, he gets it based on what he's donated to the foundation in that year.
Okay. And how much is in there right now, just so we're clear? Because I know there's a lot of numbers going on.
Yeah, I know. It's dependent so much on the rise and fall of Tesla stock. But the last time we got a snapshot was at the end of 2022, and it was a little bit more than $5 billion at that point.
So what is meant to happen to him, and who is meant to exact justice here?
Well, there's two primary regulators of nonprofits. One is the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who, okay, so we said at the end of 2022, his foundation was $234 million behind. He has a one-year grace period, 2023, to give that money away, in addition to the 5% again for 2023. If he doesn't give, he doesn't give the money away after that one-year grace period, the foundation faces a 30% penalty tax. And if it still doesn't pay, then it faces 100% penalty tax. So it would basically, the IRS would confiscate all the money that they were supposed to give away, but they did not. So that's what would happen. That's the IRS. The problem with that for me as a reporter is that the IRS, all of that enforcement is private, hidden. We can't see it unless somebody sues in tax court or federal court to stop it. So if it happened at the end of 2023, we don't know about it. The other regulator in most states is the state attorney general. They also can regulate people who violate tax laws. I mean, one example that just ended was the New York Attorney General and the National Rifle Association. She had the right to regulate and sue the NRA because it was a New York nonprofit. The Musk Foundation is a Texas nonprofit, so the authority lands with Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas. I'm not to say it won't happen, but he's a very political actor and a very political actor who's very friendly to Musk.
Wasn't he also threatening Media Matters when Musk sued them as well?
Yes.
He seems very much in his pocket.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.com.
So let's go back to this Ad Astra school. What exactly happened there? Because it's very bizarre there is a school inside SpaceX.
Yes. So it began as a school basically for Musk's children. He started it back in California when he and SpaceX were both there.
And it's a nonprofit, right?
It's a nonprofit. So again, from the beginning, it faced this requirement to serve the public and not the private good of its leader. The first class, 14 students, five of whom were Musk's own children. Later, it moves from his house to the SpaceX campus in Hawthorne, California. So it's within the gates of SpaceX there. We talked to the guy who was the headmaster. He said about half the students were related to SpaceX employees. And Musk's own children also went there for a long time. Then in 2020, Musk starts to shift his own residency, his own company center of gravity to Texas. So then the Ad Astra school picks up from California, moves to Texas, and from what we can tell, this sort of small amount of openness they had, the 50% of students they had who were not employees of SpaceX, they seem to have changed their model, where now they're behind this security gate. I went down there. If you could picture, if you've ever seen pictures of where the SpaceX rocket launch site is in South Texas, it's a very remote area close to the Gulf of Mexico. There's nothing around there. There's no people. There's no other schools. And as you drive down there, there's a little fence on the side of the highway, and you can see behind it, there's a building, there's some basketball courts. You can see what looks like a school, but there's no sign for a school. There's nothing that tells you there's a school there. Certainly nothing tells you there's a school there that you might go to if you're a member of the public. The only signs say, keep out, no trespassing. And there's a security guard who, if you stop for 10 seconds, as I did, he'll come over and ask what you're doing.
So do you know how one sends one's kids there? Is it a private school?
It is private. It does not have a website, which it used to in California, but it does not now in Texas. We asked Musk and the other people who are the directors of that school, how do you get in? Who chooses it? What's the criteria? Can you go if you're not a SpaceX employee? And we did not get answers to any of those questions.
Does it seem to flaunt any nonprofit guidelines you've seen, or is it just classic private capitalism?
It is a nonprofit. It remains legally a nonprofit. The IRS has given it tax-exempt status. So if you donate money to it, you can get a tax break for it. But that's the question here is, if this is really a nonprofit, it's really serving the public and not the private benefit of Mr. Musk or the private benefit of SpaceX. Where's the evidence of that? And that's what we asked them for and didn't get a response.
So in this other school, the foundation, what is that it? This feels, see, this is the thing with things like this. When people talk about conspiracy theories and the rich doing weird things, they always point to made up stuff versus this. So this other secret school that Musk gave, $100 million to? What have you found there?
Yeah, that was really surprising. So the Musk Foundation, despite the fact that it's very big, doesn't give very many really large donations. Then the exception, one of the exceptions, was this thing called The Foundation. And the Musk Foundation gave it money in 2022. You can pull the IRS documents for the foundation to see what it is and what they told the IRS they were going to do when they got tax-exempt status. And you can see that it's very, very closely tied to Elon Musk. So he's not on the board of directors, but the head of it is his money manager. The two other directors are his accountants. So they're people who are very close to him. And if you look at what they told the IRS they were going to do, and this got some attention at the time last year, it sounds grand. We're going to start a school. We're going to start a secondary school. We're going to start a university in Austin, Texas. And a lot of people covered that at the time and said, oh, you know, is he starting sort of a competitor to the University of Austin? What would an Elon Musk university be like? Is this where he's going to combat, you know, the forces of wokeness or, you know, the other things he talks about a lot? And so my question was just, you know, where is this school? Does it exist? Has it done anything? Because it doesn't have a web presence. It doesn't have, you know, there's no evidence. You know, if you or I said, you know, I want to go to the University of Elon Musk or, you know, whatever this is going to be, there's no way to find information about it. And so it took a lot of sleuthing, but here's what we found. The foundation, the entity that the startup charity that is run by Musk's associates, it has a shell company. The shell company last year bought a former horse farm in Bastrop, Texas, a 40-acre horse farm. Okay, so maybe that's the college. Maybe that's the University of Elon Musk. When you go look at that property, you can see that it actually matches. Well, you can see two things about it. One is that it's right around the corner from this company town, essentially, that Musk wants to build for his employees outside Bastrop. Bastrop is a exurb of Austin, but where he's building is kind of in the middle of nowhere. There's no schools or development, but he's put a boring company installation, a giant SpaceX warehouse. He's got there's like a live music venue and a store, and he's putting in 110 home subdivision. He's going to call it Snailbrook, just sort of like an inside joke, I guess, in the world of the boring company.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I guess the boring company moves as fast as a snail, so this is Snailbrook. So, but the one thing that, and he's trying to convince people to move from Austin, San Francisco, where, you know, wherever, people who have choices about where they're going to live, he's going to say, move to this rural part of Central Texas. And the thing that subdivision did not have was a school. And so the foundation, again, nominally independent, not supposed to be serving Mr. Musk's interests, just supposed to be doing its own charitable thing. The place they've selected for their first campus is right around the corner from this place where Elon Musk's company needs a school. And if you look, you can find job listings on the internet for another Ad Astra school that's being opened. And if you compare it, it's the same place. So they're going to open another Ad Astra school in this building. And that's what really struck me was the huge contrast between what these folks told the IRS they were going to be, a university for Austin, Texas, and all they've done so far, which is, it looks like, build a Montessori school for Elon Musk's employees.
So let's talk about the Musk Foundation itself. So by the sounds of it, it's what, three people, including Elon Musk? Can you just break down the vast corporate structure here? This bit drove me a little insane.
Yeah, this is really different too. So, you know, the you remember the company that they keep, right? And we're talking about the top 20 largest foundations in the United States. That's, you know, the Gates Foundation. That's, you know, the George Soros' group, the Walton Foundation.
And how big are those organizations by comparison?
So the Musk Foundation the Gates Foundation is a lot bigger. It's in the hundreds of billions. But these other groups it's around the size of other groups like the Walton Family Foundation, things like that. It's in the same ballpark.
And the Walton family is the Walmart.
The
right?
Walmart, yeah. So they, right. And they support charter schools and other things. It's common, although not always, but most of these places have payrolls in the, you know, dozens or hundreds of millions of dollars. They have lots of employees figuring out where they should give their money. By contrast, the Musk Foundation, as you said, has no paid employees at all. It's never had paid employees. It has three directors, all of whom are volunteers. There's Elon Musk, who says he works for an hour a week on it. This guy, Jared Birchall, who is Musk's longtime sort of money manager, consigliere, he also works for an hour a week.
Perfect.
And then a woman named Matilda Simon, who works for the money manager. And this part was striking. She says she works for 0.1 hours a week, which is 6 minutes.
Are they compensated at all?
No, they work for free. Yes, there's no, and you know, we've asked them, do you have board meetings? You know, what do you... You know, how you have this huge responsibility now. You have to give out $350 million a year. How are you handling that? You know, how much time do you spend on that? We didn't get answers about that.
Did they not answer at all?
They didn't answer at all.
Okay. But in practice, though.
But what we found was that in some cases, when there was something that complicated that needed to be done, I mean, so For instance, I talked about how after the rocket exploded in South Texas, Musk says, I'm going to give $30 million to all these different groups in this, the area where the rocket exploded. Okay, so now he's taken on sort of a task that either is too complicated for these three volunteers. He needs somebody to find the school districts in the area, listen to their project ideas, decide how much money each one of them should get. So he deputizes this guy named Igor Kurganov, who, as far as I can tell, was never an employee of the foundation, but he was seeming to act in its stead. So he's a professional poker player, or a former professional poker player, friend of Musk's. So now he's in charge. And you can see him, it was really funny. So we got a lot of emails back and forth between him and the school districts that he's giving the Musk Foundation's money to. And it's fascinating to see that this guy supposedly has, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to give away, but he was extremely detail-oriented in like pressing these schools and the city of Brownsville on the smallest details of the things they were going to use and the smallest dollar figures. Just to give one example, the city of Brownsville says, hey, we want to use some of the money that the Musk Foundation is giving us to put up Christmas lights for Christmas. We're going to have a big display in downtown Brownsville.
For children.
Yeah. And here's the estimate we got from the contractor. You know, this is how much it'll cost to put those lights up. Will you pay for it? And Kurganov says, you know, I want to talk about the color, the temperature of the lights that you've chosen. You've chosen cool white, and I don't believe cool white is appropriate. I think it should be a warmer color. So then they scramble around and find some warmer lights. It's funny. There's a huge contrast between this sort of general, what seemed to be kind of hands-off approach that the foundation normally runs on, and then all of a sudden there was this guy who was extremely hands-on in a way that I think people found sort of hard to deal with.
So do you think the reason they're not investing comes down to like mismanagement, or is there something else going on here?
You know, it's difficult to tell. The thing I think you can, it's hard for me to know what his motivations are. The two things I would say is, number one, Mr. Musk has always said philanthropy is a mistake. You know, he has always said publicly, philanthropy is not the way to save the world. My companies do that for me. You know, Tesla, SpaceX, they make a difference in the world that's far greater than any philanthropic effort could. He's mocked Bill Gates for believing that philanthropy is a way to change the world. I mean, that's a fine attitude to have. It's a weird attitude to square with a guy who now has given him, you know, set up a $5 billion charity. And the other thing is talking to people, my co-reporter, Ryan Mack, talked to some people who knew Mr. Musk well from Tesla and SpaceX and other places. And what they said was just that, like, this is not something he talks about or thinks about. You know, he's got a lot going on. He's got a lot of balls in the air. This was just not something they ever heard him thinking about or really considering.
So could it also be that he just wanted to park some Tesla stock without it being sold? Because just to be clear, to invest money from that stock, you would have to liquidate it shortly. Or can charities donate stock directly?
They can donate stock directly too.
It's so interesting because if he's not talking about it, this feels like just a basic tax dodge. Just the lowest possible hanging fruit, because three people does not feel, including one of them being Elon Musk, that doesn't feel like enough people to run a small business, let alone.
Yeah, three people who work a total of 2 hours and 6 minutes a week. Yeah, it is something that, you know, way he's doing it is not the way a lot of other people do it. Either other people with charities of his size either hire a big staff, or they just choose one cause and give all their money to that, you know. So, but he's kind of got the in between where hasn't chosen one cause to sort of, you know, focus all his giving around, and he also hasn't picked out any staff to handle a diffuse kind of giving. So he's sort of in the middle.
So if regulators wake up and go, "Hey, this is very obviously bad," what would be the process that worked against Musk? What would happen?
I think the thing that would happen would be an audit from the IRS. The IRS would start sending him letters and say, look, we think that we have questions about the way you're operating these charities, either the Musk Foundation or one of the schools. You know, we believe you're doing this, that, you know, there's a rules again in the tax code against using your nonprofit for private benefit. We think maybe you're violating that. Tell us more. And in the end, they could shut it down. They could make him pay back basically the tax benefits he got. Those remedies are pretty rare. The IRS is a pretty weak regulator of this space, but that would be how it would work.
Is there any historical regulation of people who have messed up at this scale?
There are not that many foundations at this scale. It's a good point. I'm not aware of the IRS coming down on anybody who is a foundation this big.
Feels like stuff like this just incentivizes more activity like this. Because this is in public, like this is out there. This is very obvious.
One of the real, I mean, so I wrote a lot about Donald Trump's foundation back in the day, right. And that is was a lot smaller than this. He had much, much, much less money than the Musk Foundation does. But it operated sort of in a similar way. In that case, you know, the New York Attorney General came down on them. It wasn't the IRS, as far as we know. I think the IRS has always been understaffed. And the thing you have to remember about them, I've always been told this by IRS veterans, is the point of the IRS is not to police. The point of the IRS is to collect money. And so they prioritize the things that bring in the most money. And nonprofit law often is not that. So they do it. They regulate it. But it's not something they put a lot of energy into. And they've obviously shied away in recent years from fights with rich people and fights with people who are politically conservative. They've been burned by that in the past. So they would really have to gird their loins before taking on somebody like Elon Musk, who is obviously both rich and now very conservative.
And would such an effort be, I'm guessing, be quite expensive?
Yeah, and that would last a long time. You know, they also have to consider sort of cost benefit. You know, how much money and time would you have to spend on this, and how much money would you get back?
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
So how does this compare? You mentioned Mr. Donald Trump. How does it compare to his situation? How egregious is it in comparison?
They're different in a couple of ways. As I said, the Musk Foundation is much bigger than the Trump Foundation ever was. The Trump Foundation was like $2 million at the most. They were similar in that they often used the money. If you looked hard enough at their charitable giveaways, you'd realize that they were spending money in ways that helped themselves. Trump was a little more direct about it, and that's what got him into trouble. He would use his foundation to do things like buy a portrait of himself and then hang it on the wall of his golf club. He would use it to pay off legal settlements for his businesses. He would use it to, you know, buy an autographed football helmet for himself. He was using it in a way that was like directly benefiting himself. And Mr. Musk is doing it in a way that's a little more oblique. And I think that matters under the law. It certainly would matter to the IRS. If they want to take on an open and shut case, the Musk Foundation may not be it. But the thing that I kept so striking to me is the same way that when I was covering the Trump Foundation, you would find things that looked innocuous or donations that looked just like regular charity. And if you pulled on the string hard enough, you'd realize actually there was a story underneath where it was Trump helping himself. And the Musk the same way. I mean, just to give you another example, he gave $5 million to UNICEF,
right?
Who, you know, the sort of like byword for an unimpeachable charity.
Classic charity.
Yeah, right. When you pull on that a little bit, you realize that he was giving money to a UNICEF program that helped countries around the world identify schools that need connection to the internet. So let's find a school, you know, schools in Rwanda or Kazakhstan or whatever that aren't connected to the internet, and then help those countries find ways to connect those schools. So effectively, he was investing in a program that created customers for Starlink, his satellite service. So at least two cases, the countries that the UNICEF helped, then once they realized where their schools needed connections, they paid Mr. Musk's company to connect them. So, you know, even there, even in the UNICEF, there's a line that goes back to his own interests.
It's genuinely despicable. But here's another. Did you find anything or much about OpenAI, which is, of course, the nonprofit wing of the company that makes ChatGPT?
Yeah. Musk had always said that he'd given $100 million to OpenAI to get started. Obviously, he was on the original board. He was one of the co-founders of OpenAI when it was a nonprofit, or when it started as a nonprofit. What we found was that he gave about $10 million from the Musk Foundation to OpenAI at the start. And then he and OpenAI agree that he gave about $34 million out of his own pocket. So he gave $44 million between September 2016 and 2020, part from the foundation, part from his own pocket. So that's a lot, but it's a lot less than he had gone around saying for years that he gave.
And that kind of seems to be the theme with a lot of his maybe good donations. He says he'll do one thing and then he does another. Let's talk about Flint, Michigan, where what he promised there and what he actually did.
So there was a period in the Musk Foundation when it had a lot of money, but not billions of dollars, in which he, this is like 2016, 17, 18, 19, it seemed like the motivator behind a lot of his giving was Twitter. Like, he was doing it in response to people who kind of called him out on Twitter. He was becoming more of a Twitter celebrity. And so, like, Mr. Beast would say, hey, I'm raising money to plant trees. You know, Elon, will you give me money? And Elon will say, yes, I'll give you $1 million to plant 1 million trees. That came from the Musk Foundation. Dave Portnoy, the guy from Barstool Sports, was raising money to help small businesses during COVID. You know, he pushes Musk and Musk responds with $1 million from the Musk Foundation. One of the more unusual sort of instances of that was there was a girl in Flint, Michigan. I think she was 10 at the time, Little Miss Flint, Mari Kopany. And she had tweeted at Musk like, hey, you know, he was thinking of buying Twitter. This is an earlier iteration of him thinking of buying Twitter. You know, you have that much money. Why don't you use it to buy, you know, supplies for Flint, Michigan, where we have this horrible water crisis? And he responds and says, I will pay to fix every home in Flint that has too much lead in the water. This is at a time, obviously, when there had been this huge epidemic of lead in water pipes and water supply.
Still kind of a problem today as well.
Yes. And so the mayor reaches out to him. The mayor says, actually, you know, what we need right now is help in the schools. You know, the schools need help. You know, the water in houses is being handled by the state. And so he gives about $1 million to the Musk Foundation to schools in Flint, both to put water filters in the school and to buy laptops for middle schoolers. He also gives a little bit more to a charity that was sort of associated with Little Miss Flint. Now, Flint people, the mayor and other people in the city of Flint see how rich he is and see that he cares about Flint, and they want more. They ask for more. They said, you know, they sent him this letter that said, you know, you have the potential to make such a huge difference in Flint. Can you give us more to do things like replace large-scale water infrastructure?
Just to add one thing, the exact thing that Musk said, I'm quoting both the article and Elon Musk himself, he will fund fixing the water in any house in Flint that has water contamination above FDA levels.
Right.
So just to be clear, he promised the world. They were not asking him for too much here. This is just what he said he'd do.
And I think he's followed up by saying, like, no kidding or something.
Yes.
So, yeah. So they ask, okay, you know, we also want, can you invest in this fund to help us build small businesses here? Will you move one of your own businesses here? And it seems like out of that came only one, you know, beyond the things I already mentioned, the only additional thing they did was send a guy from Tesla. He came a guy from Tesla who was thinking about setting up an operation there, some sort of Tesla building or operation. And so he came and sort of met people at the city hall, gave rides in the Tesla around the city hall parking lot, and that was it. Nothing more came of it.
Just around the parking lot?
I don't know why just around the parking lot, but just around the parking lot.
Very bizarre.
And so the mayor said, you know, look, we were happy he gave something. You know, he didn't have to give anything. She said that this was a time when, you know, that 2018, 2019 was a time when they were hearing from sort of a lot of celebrities, you know, well-meaning celebrities, but they were sort of being inundated by offers from various celebrities. Flint had become that much of a cause celebrity. All these people wanted to help. And so Elon was one of them, and he gave, you know, it sounds like he gave about $1 million. They definitely wanted more, but they were happy with what they got.
It's weird because a situation like that, it's good he gave, like, money for water filters and laptops for kids. Like, unquestionably good. But also, he didn't actually fix the problem. He didn't actually fix Flint's water problem. And it sounds like that was a problem with celebrities in general then.
Yeah, I mean, I think his problem was his promise to fix the water in the houses was more specific. And he also probably had the capacity to do it more than a lot of the other celebrities had offered. But yes, that is the striking thing is, yes, the city steered him into schools, and the mayor said, we steered him into schools first, thinking that, you know, we let the state try to fix the houses, and if that didn't work, then Elon could fix those too. So he didn't do the thing that he said he was going to do in this tweet.
So on a large scale, it seems like a lot of tech people outside of maybe Bill Gates seem very bad at the philanthropy thing. Like, Mark Zuckerberg is the one I'm thinking of, his $100 million to what's New York School Systems. Why is it that, this is a very dumb guy question, I realize. Why is it that just having a lot of money doesn't help? How is it that, is it actually quite difficult to deploy this capital?
I think it is, the answer is yes, that it's hard to give this much money away. You can do it in one of two ways. You can do it the Mackenzie Bezos way. I mean, she's an example of somebody who has a lot of money and has given away a lot of money, but she's not, you know, she is like dropping it from heaven. You know, she's not trying to sort of come in and help you manage your organization. She doesn't want a grant proposal. She just shows up and gives you a lot of money and then leaves. Other folks who have tried to sort of invest in something over the longer term, you mentioned Mark Zuckerberg. You know, I think it also is just a matter of time. Like, it's really, really hard to give money away effectively, especially if you're trying to like have a specific outcome in the world. And maybe these guys are too busy. I mean, the one of the other sort of people who have a foundation about as big as Elon's is Larry Page, the guy from Google. Mm-hmm. And his foundation both fails to make its minimum payouts, but also gives its money, all of its money, into something called a donor advised fund, which is basically like a warehouse for money. And it disappears into there. We don't know where it went or if any of it actually went out into the world. So it does seem like maybe these folks don't have the time or the, you know, the bandwidth to put money into put the attention commensurate with the money they're putting in.
So, but just to be clear, Larry Page, co-founder of Google, he is doing a similar thing?
He is doing a similar, well, it's not similar in that I don't have any proof that he's doing things that benefit himself, but he's a huge amount of money. He's failed to meet that goal or that minimum of 5% payout. And what he's doing with his money in some ways he basically is giving it to a middleman, and then there's no sense of a charitable middleman, the special sort of class of charitable middleman. And we don't know what happens to it after that. So what he's doing is less transparent than what Musk is doing.
Are there other tech people doing similar, maybe not same size, but there are other philanthropic efforts failing to invest?
No, the if you look at the people who were above Musk, so the shortfall that Musk had at the end of 2022, where his foundation was $234 million under what it should have given away, there were only three foundations that were worse than that, had a bigger shortfall that year. Larry Page's one, the Hewlett Foundation was another, and then the Lilly Foundation tied to the drug maker Eli Lilly was the first. So there are not that many out of the hundreds and hundreds of foundations in the U.S., those four had the biggest shortfalls.
But they still managed to get billions of dollars in tax breaks out of this.
Yeah, this is a field that is not that well policed, as I said, by the IRS or anybody else.
And is it just that expensive and time-consuming? Or would there be a massive legal fight to try and actually get this thing done?
I mean, Congress could change the laws, or they could give the IRS more money to go after it. I think the this has suffered from a sense of neglect, and also the IRS's general weakness. If they're going to use political capital, they're going to use it on collecting taxes, not fighting nonprofits.
So where do you think this goes from here? Do you think it just continues doing nothing or doing less than the bare minimum?
Well, we will not know. The reporting, you know, the the filing deadlines are so slow that we won't know until this November whether the Musk Foundation met its goals for 2023, unless they choose to tell us first. The actual required deadline for them to release something publicly is not till November. And we may know then if the IRS has taken some action against them, but we may never know if they've taken action against them. So we're going to keep watching it and see what else it's done. But there's no expectation that I have that we're going to see any changes anytime soon.
I'll end with a personal question. Does any of this work kind of depress you, make you a little cynical because you see these people just getting these massive benefits?
That's a good question. I mean, the reason I cover nonprofits, that's what I right. do all the time. And the reason I got into this is because there is such a, like, obviously the nonprofit sector does such amazing work. There's so many incredible things that nonprofits do, but it also is a shield. You know, we give nonprofits legal rights, we give them tax breaks, and we also give them this sort of, you know, veneer of do-gooderism that makes people both in government and outside government not want to look any closer. And so some people use that, you know, they use that goodwill, they use that those privileges as kind of a shield to hide self-dealing, to hide, you know, foreign influence, to hide enrichment, embezzlement, all kinds of things. And so that's the sort of stuff that I do every day, is to try to find out what people are doing behind that kind of screen of philanthropy or screen of sort of goodwill. So it doesn't depress me. It's just, that's what I do every day. And I think it makes a fascinating beat, this contrast of like the great potential and the great trust and the reality of these groups sometimes.
David, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
So what's remarkable about this story to me is that Musk has, for all intents and purposes, received a multi-billion dollar tax break in exchange for about $250 million. That which he has spent has mostly gone to things that directly benefit him, and the few times he's actually spent it well on people that need it, he's gone the Musk route of overpromising and underdelivering. It's genuinely despicable to watch him send $100 million to an barely incorporated school in Texas. No campus exists, they own some land, and it's very clearly lining up with his other companies. And that's about 100 times more than he provided to Flint, Michigan, a place where he promised and he received a ton of positive press for fixing their contaminated water system. He didn't do it. He did some stuff, and it's good that he did something, but you can see how much money this man deploys, and you see how little he's actually done with it. And it's also sickening to watch this unfathomably rich man, this ultra-rich ghoul, receive a massive, massive return for doing very little and actively conning the nonprofit system. And as David kind of hinted at, there just isn't the regulatory framework or action or political capital to actually fight a man like Elon Musk. As I've said before, the US government just, and we as a society, are just not capable of dealing with billionaires. But there is another side of this story. Musk doesn't want this money spent. Most of this, they have a terribly small amount of money, less than $100,000, I believe. He doesn't want this money spent anywhere because he wants to hoard that Tesla stock as much as he can. Putting any downward pressure on Tesla would be a bad idea, and almost all the money that this foundation has is Tesla stock. But this is still a very important story, even if nothing changes, because it's another way of showing how empty the legend of Elon Musk really is. He got so much positive press around this foundation. He promised to fix Flint, Michigan's water system. He got tons of press in 2018, and he's given away, what, $1 million? For him, that is something he finds in his pockets or between the couch cushions. Probably has more there. He got another bunch of press for giving away 11.6 million Tesla shares to charity. And that's kind of close to what the Wall Street Journal actually wrote. He didn't give away anything, by the way. He put it in a charity literally with his name on it, or a nonprofit in this case. And as we've heard, he hasn't really spent it. And he even at one point tweeted that he sent this to the UN saying he would spend $6 billion to fight world hunger, but only if they tell him how they'd spend it. Which, I don't know. There's always a condition with this man. There's always a trick. And I just think it's because he doesn't really care that much. And he'll continue to do stuff like this as long as the media is unable or unwilling to call him out. And indeed, as long as they're willing to buy his bullshit This man is a liar. He's a billionaire con artist. He's mastered exploiting the law and society and the media to get even richer. Yet I'm not freaking out too much because David Farenthold, he's won a Pulitzer for work exactly like this with Donald Trump. There is more to this story that I'm sure David will bring out. And his colleague, Ryan Mack, who worked on the story with him, is one of the most industrious Elon Musk reporters out there. The media is turning on this man. And this work is deep, it's dangerous, and it's going up against the man who has proven to have a hostile relationship to the press and to society. But these stories are so important. And as they accumulate, Musk's reality distortion field will fall apart more. It's already going. And I'm not saying this man can be brought down. I don't think there's anything that could truly, quote-unquote, stop Elon Musk. But we can close the wound that he's opened in society, where he's just drinking money from the blood of others. And I really want you to read David's work. And I put a link to it in the show notes of this episode. It's important you read this. It's important you try and understand exactly how little Elon Musk has done for the world. Because it's time to turn on this man. It's time to stop calling him an inventor. He didn't invent anything. It's time to even stop calling him a philanthropist. At the scale he's done things here, he's barely done anything. But you should check out David's story. You can find him on Twitter at Farenthold. That's Farenthold. He's a great guy. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to Better Offline. The editor and composer of the Better Offline theme song is Matt Osowski. You can check out more of his music and audio projects at mattosowski.com, MattOsowski.com. You can email me at easy@betteroffline.com or check out betteroffline.com to find my newsletter and more links to this podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Better Offline is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.